Well, boys, I think I know what all the kids going home for the holidays will be getting up to after nearly 2 years of development. Just in time for everybody to go home and play around, XFCE 4.20 has been released. Can you believe it?
Wow.
Okay, maybe the kids won't be playing around with it, but I mean, how often can we say we're going on the air with breaking XFCE news? This came out this morning. It's pretty great to see. Yeah, it's been a long time. 2 years is no joke, and it's been really a lot of getting ready for Wayland. So this release has what they're calling experimental for advanced users only Wayland compatibility.
Hey, that means we should try it.
I'm actually kind of excited about this. So you got Wayland. Now, you do need a compositor still because they don't have it built in yet, so you need something like Wayfire. There are plans for XFWM4 to have Wayland support, but it's not there yet.
Oh, cool.
So Wayfire could be fun. And they're also working on a new library that provides abstraction for different windowing concepts across different systems and for different scaling. And Thunar, the file manager, has seen a ton of improvements.
Really, still one of my favorite file managers on the desktop.
I actually think now with this release, this is a serious contender for any GTK-based desktop. It looks so good. We'll have a link to the blog with all the release notes, and you can just look at the screenshots. There's tons of improvements. I think we really should try this pretty soon. 4.20 is looking like a really great release. And I just wasn't sure a couple of years ago where XFCE was going to be in the whole Wayland transition.
But Christmas came early.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to your weekly Linux talk show. My name is Chris.
My name is Wes.
And my name is Brent.
Well, hey, gentlemen, you know, it's almost our last show of the year, so we've got lots of updates and stories that you'll want to hear. Then we'll dive headfirst into our RT Linux kernel adventures, where the speed seduced us, but stability ghosted us. And then, you know, we're wrapping up the flow with some fresh boosts, some picks, and more to the show. So before we go any further, let's say time-appropriate greetings to our virtual lug. Hello, Mumble Room!
Hey, guys.
Mumble Room not messing around today. Look at that.
Beefy.
And a bunch up there in the quiet listening, too. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us in the live Mumble Room, which we always have going during our live streams. And a big good morning to our friends over at Tailscale. Tailscale.com/unplugged. You know, Tailscale is the easiest way to connect devices and services directly to each other, wherever they are. It's a modern networking solution for connecting your devices securely. It's great for companies, and it's great for self-hosters as well. We use it in both capacities. It's secure, like really secure. It's protected by
WireGuard.
That's right, and it's fast, really, really fast. It'll build out a mesh network and get it going in just minutes. And if you go to tailscale.com/unplugged, you can get it free for up to 100 devices and 3 users, no credit card required. That's the plan. It's not a limited time deal. It's the one I'm on. And it's also a great way to try it as a company, too, because thousands of companies like Instacart, Hugging Face, Duolingo, and more are using Tailscale. So try it out and support the show for 100 devices for free at tailscale.com/unplugged. Like I said, it's almost our last episode of the year. So I invite you to join us next Sunday, December 22nd, 2024, we're recording the last 2 episodes, and in between, we'll be blasting some sats to those of you who have new podcasting 2.0 wallets, like Fountain or AlbiHub, and we'll be answering some of your questions around that, and we'll also be doing, perhaps, the very last Tuxies ever.
Say it ain't so.
We're looking at the numbers, and they're pretty low. We think maybe the Tuxies is done. It's probably mostly our fault, just because we're busy these days, but right now, we're sitting around 900 votes. And if we don't have over 2,000 votes by the time we do the Tuxies, I think that officially makes it the final Tuxies.
So probably when you're hearing this, you got less than a week to get your vote in if you haven't already.
Tuxies.party if you would like to vote. And then join us the 22nd for the final Tuxies. And we'd love to have your help party for episode 600, which is coming up on February 2nd of 2025. We have the Colony Events site that is working, colonyevents.com. It wasn't working the best after we launched it.
No, it did manage to delete several of the first events, but that's been rectified.
I don't believe it was our fault. I mean, it kind of was our fault, actually. kind of was our fault. It was very funny. Very funny prank. Very funny. You're lame because whoever did it has a Linux 5.4 kernel. I'm just saying that's very lame. So it's probably some enterprise Linux user. But our bad for not turning the firewall on and things like that. So anyways, that aside, colonyevents.com is up and running. And it's actually saving your events now.
There's six of them on there. Wow, look at that.
I know. I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at Central MA. I'm looking at Berkeley, CA. I'm looking at Central Florida. Listening party in United Kingdom, London. And one in the Phoenix, Arizona area. Plus ours in the Pacific Northwest. People are starting to set them up. It's great to see you guys. You're absolutely welcome to do them beforehand. If for some reason doing it on the show day doesn't work in your area. And just... you know, pass around a phone and make a nice tight recording for us to say hi. We'd love to play it on air. But if you do make it to one of these meetups on Sunday, February 2nd, during LEP 600, we'd love to have you join us with at least one machine there with a microphone. Get in the mumble room and come say hi. Colonyevents.com if you want to check for a meetup in your area or if you want to set one up. It is our self-hosted Gavio instance. No account required, but you do probably want to save your edit key. Should be a fun party, right? We'll have one around our area. I don't think we're going to do it at the studio, but maybe near the studio. I'm not sure.
TBD.
Maybe we'll have it like an after party at like a place near the studio that we go to afterwards.
Well, that's a good idea.
That could be a lot of fun. That's something we've never done before. It could be a new thing.
Might be a little more practical too because we will be distracted.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's like a show to do and
right.
Social stuff to do. So there's all that. Links in the show notes for all the stuff I just mentioned. If it went past you at all, just go to linuxunplug.com/593. Before we wrap up for the year, we are trying to get some news stories in, and we have a fresh one here. CentOS Stream 10 is out. And our buddy Carl not only wrote the blog post to tell us all about it, but he is here in the mumble room to give us the inside scoop. Carl? Good to hear from you. Welcome back.
Hey, what's up? I didn't actually write that blog post, although I helped draft it.
Oh, I see. So I won't give you full credit then. But so you may know a bit about it. Tell us about Stream 10.
So it's looking really good. So every 3 years, CentOS will branch off from Fedora, and that'll serve as the base for the next major version of RHEL. That happens in the CentOS project by RHEL engineers, but it's all happening in the open so people can actually contribute to it, unlike the old CentOS model. So that's a big difference of, like, if you've been tuned out of it for a little while and you don't know what's going on, that's what's really different now is it's RHEL getting built in the open. It's the major version of RHEL, and then the minor versions of RHEL branch off, and that becomes the actual product that's sold and certified and all that fun stuff. But you can just use the major version, no restrictions, and hop in right now. And RHEL 10's not even out. That doesn't come out till probably Q2 of next year, and that's when a lot of the companies are going to be getting on it. But if you just want to start using it now, CentOS 10 is what we feel is pretty ready. It's also, it already has RHEL 10.0 features in it. Some people were confused because the RHEL 10 beta came out last month and they're saying, well, what's the difference between this and the beta? Well, the beta is like a minor version before zero and that branched off a few months ago. So CentOS Stream 10 is ahead of the beta and basically is the GA early, if that makes sense.
I like this, the new stream model. It just makes, when we hear it now, right? Instead of us having to get a CentOS off the product release, like we're seeing what the product's going to be out here in the open. It's just neat.
Especially if you're building for that in the future, you know, you can start working on today. I mean, it's no slouch either. I thought this was supposed to be like a really slouchy kind of conservative release, but you got Linux 6.12 and GNOME 47 in there. So,
well, you got to start on the fresh stuff. So that way, whenever it's still the same, you know, right, 5 years later, it's not too bad.
But I'm just looking at that right now. I'm like, that's not a bad desktop.
Python 3.12, that's going to be a nice one to have around for a while, I think.
Are you using it as a desktop, Carl?
I have it on one machine. I made one of those new framework external Coolmaster things. Like I refreshed the motherboard on my framework and then took the old one and put it in that case. I put it on there and it works great. But I'm not using it as my daily driver. My daily driver is still a Fedora on a ThinkPad, but... no, it works pretty good. A lot of the apps that people would want to install, they're getting from Apple, which is Chris, but what I mainly work on. I help with CentOS also, but Apple's like it's sort of like the Ubuntu universe. It's community maintain packages for that. We actually started that earlier than we ever had. We started that at Fedora's Flock conference this year, kind of as a soft launch before we announced it. And it's already up over 10,000 packages, and yeah. it has things that you would be looking for, like KDE Plasma or Chromium, a lot of things like that that would be really useful stuff you would want to use it for a desktop for. I wouldn't necessarily say it's designed to be used as a desktop. It's just a general purpose OS, but you can certainly do so if you want to.
I mean, I was blown away when I saw some of the numbers. You know, 10,000 packages, 150 different Fedora package maintainers contributing to Apple. So as an end user, say I'm on stream 10 and I want to consume Apple, is that like a DNF repository that I'm bringing into my box?
Right. Yeah, you can just do DNF install apple-release, and we've got those instructions on the website. I've got another blog post I'll copy and paste in a minute when I'm not holding down the push to talk button.
Sure. This is really sweet. I mean, there's so much stuff in here. It really feels like a lot of what, there used to be such a separation between Fedora and CentOS in this regard.
Yeah, and that's something that's interesting that happened a few years back that didn't make a lot of news. A lot of people didn't really notice it. When I first started working at Red Hat in 2019, I was working on CentOS directly. And after a few years of doing that, my VP came to me and asked me if I wanted to start a team to focus on Apple, which is actually what I told the guy that hired me I wanted to do in the first place. I didn't actually ask to work on CentOS. It was just the best thing to work on at the time. Made sense. So I started that team working on Apple. The big thing, the reason that was justified, it doesn't make any money. We don't sell it, but it is because it's just a community repo, extra packages for RHEL and CentOS. But the reason it made a lot of sense was that we had customers telling us regularly, the reason I'm not upgrading from, say, RHEL 7 to RHEL 8 is because the community packages I need aren't available yet in Apple 8, but they're there in Apple 7. I know they're not supported, but I still need them to be present. So that was when the business decided, yeah, we probably should have at least one or two people like focused on making sure this is in a healthy state. Apple 8 was really far behind at that point. Definitely didn't have 10,000 packages. In fact, Apple 8 launched late after RHEL 8, and that was a real pain point. It was taking a long time to get packages built out. We started Apple 9 early also. We started Apple 9 with basically zero packages at the same time as CentOS Stream 9, but that was still like 6 months before RHEL 9, so it was still a big celebration. Hey, we started it way before RHEL. This is awesome. Now we actually started it even earlier and then gave maintainers time to build out a few packages before we announced it. So instead of announcing with zero packages and getting flack about that, we waited a little while, built it up, and then announced it with 10,000 packages.
I was going to ask if you could maybe talk about like what does it take to get 10,000 packages prepared and built and ready to be served to users who are going to be pulling them down now?
A lot of volunteers. a lot of those actually are Rust libraries. I noticed that. I started looking at some of what it was made up. It's not that it's all just a bunch of Rust libraries that you wouldn't care about yourself, but there's a lot of applications that the way they're built out in Fedora's packages will be there's a library and a binary command. Think like the FD find replacement thing. There'll be a library and the binary for that. Then it'll also have, whatever, one, two dozen libraries that it depends on. We have the Fedora Rust SIG is super active, especially one guy I'll give a special shout out to, Fabio. He's built the most of those packages. And a lot of those are Rust-based applications and the libraries that they need to build. But it's not just Rust. KDE itself has a ton of dependencies and a ton of applications. That's a coworker of mine. I don't know Fabio's last name offhand. I know his Fedora username. The other guy, the KDE guy, Troy Dawson, he's a coworker of mine. Great guy. He's actually the Apple steering committee chair, and he works on the CentOS Stream release engineering team. And he works on KDE just as a volunteer thing on the side. It's not even what he's paid to work on at all. He just does that because he loves KDE. And that's a whole lot of packages that I've got to get built and shipped out there.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah. It's really, the short answer is it's a lot of dedicated volunteers that really want to see this happen, see it be successful. They have packages they care about that they maintain in Fedora, and then they want to use them either on CentOS now or later, or RHEL later, or even some of the RHEL clones and alternatives later on. They want to use them there.
Man, I am really just grateful when I think about it. And I'm impressed that this is still a priority, for Red Hat and for the Fedora community. I mean, clearly it's been a priority for some people. It kind of makes me rethink how I frame some of these distributions. Stream 10, available now. Go get it with Linux 6.12, Python 3.12, Rust 182, and GNOME 47. Any other thoughts, Carl, before we move on?
No, that was the main thing. I just wanted to let people know it was happening, and we were happy about it.
Yeah, it's really great to see, and we'll have links in the show notes, of course. Thanks for joining us, Carl, even though you're on the road. appreciate getting it straight from the one of the co-authors and the author.
Yeah, of course. No, I was definitely involved. I was proofreading and tweaking and helping change things. I did write the CentOS Stream 10 release notes for the most part. Well, it wasn't just me, but I put the final thing together and said, no, this we don't need this. We do need this. We're missing this. And yeah, got a lot of feedback from people. I appreciate everyone that helped me get those. The few people that know who they are, I reached out to. I was like, hey, can you proofread this and tell me, like, what am I missing here? What are people going to say? How did you not mention this?
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot. It's like a new baby's born, right? And you're going to watch it grow up and become a real adult one day.
One day very soon. It's not that far off.
Yeah, it moves fast. All right, very good, Carl. Enjoy the fam and the trip. Thanks for joining
us. Yeah, I'm going to duck on out of here, but it was great talking to y'all. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, sir. While we're talking about Fedora, the project leader, Matthew Miller, made some news this week. He announced that after a decade, he is going to step down from the leadership role.
Big news.
Yeah. He says in the post that he was initially aiming for a 5-year term, but then he extended his tenure because it felt like there was still more to do. And after 10 years, he thinks it's probably time for a new leadership at the top. Some new ideas, he says. The search for a new leader, this is from the post, will begin in a job posting from Red Hat. The goal of appointing a successor by early 2025, that's the goal, to coincide with the release of Fedora 42. He also plans to then mentor the next Fedora project leader to just help with a smooth transition. He says, quote, I'm stepping into a full-time role in the community Linux engineering organization. So Fedora will be part of my day job, just in a different way.
You know, I think you got to respect a lot about this. Not only are you, you know, Matthew's going to stick around, be available, clearly cares about the transition and how that's going to go. But you're also kind of like recognizing that, you know, maybe not even close to burned out or anything, but just that there are opportunities here for other people who have ideas and they should have a chance to try it. And maybe they have more energy to make the next version of Fedora great.
And Brent, it does sort of feel like we've been talking about this kind of newish era of Linux desktop that maybe is a little more like silver blue. And perhaps if we are transitioning into this, maybe it is time for fresh ideas.
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, we have so many people in the Linux community who've been working on projects for a long time, but there needs to be room for new people as well, right? And I'm excited to see what's going to come down the pipe in terms of some of these changes and like bring on the new ideas. Although I will say it's still great to see that, you know, Matthew still wants to be involved. So looking forward to what's going to come down the pipe.
It's also just a nice time to reflect on all that he's done. I mean, he's come on this show numerous times, super active in the community at all these events. It's really been a wonderful face for Fedora.
And sort of the 42 release is kind of a nice transitionary moment. You know, this is a nice solid round number. But to your point about him coming on the show, you know, that's our primary experience interfacing with Matthew is through the show. And at events, we almost always run into him at events, every event that we go to, really. And I think Matthew really brought a new, fresh, and smart take on Fedora's approach to online media. Not to really disparage the folks before Matthew, but Matthew really understood that YouTube and podcasts and a lot of that kind of coverage was sort of the new media of Linux. And, you know, your Linux magazines were kind of fading. And the old way of, like, you know, giving somebody an interview a month before the way they write an article a month after that, and then maybe it kind of lands around the time the distribution lands. That was kind of an old strategy. Matthew figured out that, hey, I could come on the show the day we have a new Fedora release, and I could pop in the mumble room, and I could just tell the guys about it, and we could answer questions and just talk about it. And that was a real fresh take on how to communicate directly with the community and the people that are actually using Fedora. And so I hope, you know, future leadership also has that same perspective, and I bet they will. I think Matthew's kind of instilled that as sort of one of the project's values. So he's done a great job. We've all had personal experiences with him. I remember when we went out to Indian food and he got something just crazy spicy. that was a lot of fun. You remember that? That was a good time. That was the things, you know, a lot of great times off air. We had great times on air and off air. So we have a lot of gratitude towards his work. That's something to celebrate when Fedora 42 drops.
Ooh, there's more to look forward to from Fedora 42, though, because there's maybe going to be a Fedora Cosmic Desktop spin.
I would love to see this. I think Fedora could be a premier Cosmic desktop, you know, the premier Ubuntu alternative, if you will. They wrote the benefit to Fedora in this proposal would be, well, Fedora is already one of the most popular choices for Cosmic out there, next to Pop OS, obviously. And having an official spin for Cosmic is a logical next step to bring these users to a more streamlined Fedora experience. For example, making use of the ISO generation for spins, Cosmic is also shaping up to be a great desktop with a great experience.
Just remind ourselves, what, Alpha 4 is where we're at with Cosmic? It's cool to see this effort moving ahead before we even got like a 1.0.
It does seem like that would be the time to get in.
Yeah, I mean, we're ironing all these things out so you can have a really nice 1.0 shipped, I expect, in the future.
As a former Lizard, Brent, I'm curious if you were going to give Cosmic a spin, say, to review on the show, and there was a Fedora spin that was top-notch, and then you got Pop OS, which is obviously going to be a top-notch, which would you be more likely to try?
I mean, it seems like you should probably try the Pop OS one, but really the real answer is we should try both, see how they compare, see how they take the different directions. But I have to say, Fedora, I'm going to give a huge round of applause because they've been embracing newer, promising projects for the last year and doing some cool work there and just saying, hey, if you want to try something new and different and you think it's going to go places, come to Fedora and we'll make it happen. And I think huge, huge applause there.
My hot take is, once you got the spin, then you don't have to use apt, right? You got DNF.
Ooh,
plus
yeah.
Cosmic.
Ooh, that's attractive.
Tiny in our live matrix chat says, I'm using Cosmic on Fedora on my laptop right now. It's pretty all right. It works with my passkey. The only problem I have is the shortcuts are more Mac-like and less like Plasma or Windows. I could see that. I think they're, I think System 76 is rightfully targeting folks that might be a little more power user, maybe more developer-focused users that don't really want the Mac platform, but maybe are coming from an old MacBook. Imagine how many developers out there, like just web devs writing JavaScript, are probably just like on Intel MacBooks.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be a huge market you could soak up with a good Cosmic desktop on a nice Intel-based Linux laptop, I would think. So I hope Fedora does it. This is a proposal, and you'll never guess that you'll just be shocked, I would say, to hear that Neil's name is on the proposal.
Who would have guessed,
right? Now, if we say his name three times, I think he shows up in the mumble. And also Ryan Brew's on there as well. So there's two names on the proposal. I'll kind of keep an eye on it and see where it goes. And then, kind of like not in the proposal stage, but taking a look over at Ubuntu 24.10, there's like low-key conversation about replacing GNOME Terminal with, how do we say it, Wes?
Good question. Tixis?
Yeah, it's something like that, I think. P-T-Y-X-I-S. And this is that terminal that's kind of supercharged and container-ready. And it was introduced as an optional terminal in Ubuntu 24.10. It's not the default. GNOME Console, the newer one, remains the default in 2504 daily builds as of right now for the next release. However, looking through the communication around desktop team, Canonical software engineer Jeremy Baca said that maybe we should, quote, recommend replacing GNOME Terminal with PyTis, or however you say it. And I would love to see this because I'm not really sure what GNOME folks are doing. God bless, I recently switched over to GNOME 47 on my home workstation. I've really been enjoying it. But almost immediately, it becomes obvious that GNOME Console is a real weak spot of the desktop. Very watered down, very basic, feels like an app that's been rebooted three times. And I find that kind of ironic because the terminal is sort of inherently a power user tool. And so I don't quite understand making it crappy. I understand making it clean. I understand making the interface simple. But I don't understand making it crappy and basic and bad. And then doing it a second time for something that is inherently, by its very nature, a power user tool. Right? Where Console is like one of the best terminal applications, period. Not for Linux desktop, but just period, right? That's what Plasma ships. One of the best terminals, period, right? That's what Plasma ships. GNOME keeps doing this weird thing with their terminal. I don't know if it's like maybe it's like technical debt they had to get rid of. I don't know what it is, but I completely support this idea to switch.
It just kind of feels like, all right, we're going to change it, which okay, but then it's never quite done.
It didn't finish.
Yeah, right. It just gets set down on the shelf again and kind of never touched again.
And then we start with a new one. Yeah. And that's, so I have been, and I would love some input from the audience because I have been really enjoying GNOME 47 except the terminal. And I don't want to replace it with something Electron-based. I don't really need it to be super fancy, but, you know, I would like it to have some features where maybe I could, like, set the width and stuff like that reliably, like things like that. So
have you thought about, like, an old virtual terminal or not, like a physical console setup?
Cool.
To, like, a serial port or something?
That's a great idea, Wes. I don't really have room in the RV for that, but I really like where your head's at. Maybe I could get, like a Visa mount, you know, and I could just mount, like, an old terminal above my widescreen.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be something. Maybe it's PyTix or however you say it.
Tixis?
Tixis. Not sure. I'm not really sure. But otherwise, I think GNOME 47's been, it's been pretty nice. It feels like they've really gotten a good spot. It feels really tight. Other than, now I'm kind of over there looking at Thunder thinking.
I do think this, you know, terminal app, it's kind of, it's quite the little rise from kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Popping into smaller distros, things like uBlue, and then now we've got it up being a recommended replacement.
1Password.com/unplugged. That's the number 1Password.com/unplugged. If you are in IT or if you're in a company that could use something like this, I want you to pay close attention. Do you think end users are always, and I mean always without exception, using company-approved devices and company-approved applications? I don't think so. It's just not really possible in today's world. I mean, you connect so many things to different accounts. There's new devices coming out all the time. Herding cats is putting it lightly. It's nearly impossible to expect everyone to stick to all company apps and all company devices all the time. Employees are going to have their own phones, their own tablets, their own laptops, their own smart TV. I just read through the EULA on my smart TV. By the way, you can plug your calendar into it. Yikes. So the obvious next question is how do you keep your company's data safe when it's sitting on all these unmanaged apps and devices and don't make users end life miserable? Well, 1Password has the answer to this. It's extended access management. 1Password extended access management helps you secure every sign-in for every app on every device because it's solving problems that your traditional IAMs and MDMs just can't touch. It's security for the way we actually work today, and it makes end users' lives actually much easier. It reduces friction between IT and the end users. It's generally available for companies with Okta and Microsoft Entra. It's also in beta for Google Workspace customers. It's really easy to get started, and they have more information at 1Password.com/unplugged. This could be the thing that just unlocks this for your company. Check it out and support the show. 1Password.com/unplugged.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks since we talked about Linux 6.12. I think episode 589 is the last time we talked about it. And you both have been brave enough to be running that kernel with a special function ever since. You want to give us an update?
Yeah. Okay. So 6.12 came out and we were excited because the long out of tree preempt RT patch set had been finally merged with 6.12. And so I built a custom patched kernel to enable that and then built it. And both Chris and I started running it on one of our workstations.
As one does.
As one does.
Because, you know, at first we wanted to just try it for audio testing.
Which it did great at.
Yeah. And then I was like, wait a minute. The actual whole computer feels faster. And you noticed that too.
I did.
And then I'm like, well, now I can't not have this because the entire desktop interface feels a little snappier. Even, it's strange to say, but even Firefox tabs open a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Terminal, the console, to everything.
Yeah. Everything is just a little tiny bit faster. And once you've turned everything up a little bit, you really want it. You want it real bad. So, yeah, went ahead and threw Wes's custom built kernel on my machine, which was quite the adventure.
Yeah. Rootkit and everything. I mean, what?
is that what all that network activity was? And I definitely hit a few snakes. But you didn't. So I want to hear your overall impressions first before I say the negative stuff.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would say one snake, but it took me a while to realize that maybe it was going on. I think by and large, had a great time, been very snappy, and, you know, with Preempt, you're kind of trading having lower latency for reduced throughput, but, you know, doing stuff like rendering audio or other things where throughput's more of my concern, and you and Plasma here putting it in, you know, performance-oriented mode and everything, like, I still seemed totally fine. So I was overall quite happy, except I noticed that my machine just seemed to be running hotter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Your fans were going more?
Yeah, even in, like, not... Okay, in performance mode, sure, but just in, like, the normal hybrid sort of balance between energy saving and performance, like...
Oh, you know, I was just commenting to Brent that my fan is running more, and I thought maybe it was because I switched to GNOME. But maybe it's the RT kernel.
Uh-huh. And, you know, in a desktop rig, or, like, if you weren't doing stuff where the fans were... You know, there's plenty of cases where maybe I wouldn't care if the machine was still at safe operating temperatures and, you know, adequately cool and all that.
Right, but this is audio we're doing right here, and you don't want your fan going. And
I was also using this just in the off time, sitting on my lap, you know, on the couch while I'm watching TV.
Oh, it's so annoying.
The fans are going, and it's getting, like, noticeably hot, which, if I'm not just browsing the web, it should not normally do.
And you know this machine. You know it doesn't do that.
Uh-huh.
Weird. Okay. I see. Mine's on my B-Link, so I'm not, like, going on battery or moving it around. And it has a pretty crappy fan in there already, so I just sort of assumed it was inadequate fan combined with extra storage and stuff. But, yeah, my fan is going more often as well.
Is enough that I started turning it down just to, like, hey, chill out, machine, so you
you're
stop
using,
using
like,
your fan.
Are you using, like, the performance profiles in Plasma? To,
yep.
Yeah. Hmm, I should try that. And you notice a difference when you change?
Oh, very much. Immediately.
Okay. I'll try that. Oh, wait. I mean, I think GNOME you can still
the
do
problem
it.
Is, at least for me, like, in the let's see. So there's, right now I'm in the balanced one, and then there's power save and performance. It is fun toggling while you're rendering audio, because it just, the speed immediately changes.
Yeah.
The power save, which does a great job of not running the fans, is just... It's the opposite, right? Everything's a little slower.
Yeah.
New tabs,
yeah.
Changing windows. So I prefer really not to have to run it.
Right.
Except if I'm on a plane trying to save battery or something.
It makes me think, like, if I was on a desktop that was well cooled, you know, this would be a no problem kind of thing. But when you're on a little tiny computer or a laptop, you kind of notice it. But you didn't have...
I didn't have your problem. And I thought that I might have further problems because in my patching, I actually had to patch the Intel i915 driver, which is... At least at the time of the 6.12 kernel we were building, disabled because it isn't fully, there's some, you can get into problems where something could get preempted at a time that wasn't safe to do so, which has not seemingly been a problem for me.
I love that you're just YOLO'd into that. You're like, well, we'll see. It's probably fine. Yeah, no, for me, so my system's AMD graphics, so I don't really have to worry about the Intel driver. But I had this really kind of persistent system lockup that would happen. And, you know, I'm probably running 3 Electron apps, Telegram, Firefox, maybe, you know, 7 tabs of Firefox plus another Firefox window with maybe a video or media playing. And I probably have a console open. I may or may not have Steam in the background. But it's not like anything's maxed. System's usually sitting with plenty of free RAM. You know, I'm like literally like probably 30 gigs free. And, you know, maybe I'm at 0.5 system load. So we're totally fine on resources. And it doesn't matter if I'm actively using the machine or just letting it sit there. About 4 or 5 times a day, it just hard locks. Just hard locks. And it's an interesting thing because if, say, I'm watching video, the first thing I'd notice, and it all happens within a few seconds, but the first thing I would notice is the video pauses. My mouse works, and like if I'm in a text editor, for a second or so, the text editor is still working. Because Ooh. I've always noticed, like, hey, why is my video paused? What's going on? And I'll stop typing, and then all of a sudden, everything's locked. And my mouse is locked, and the only thing I can do is hard power it off, and then boot back up. And I mean, how long? I mean, it's been, what, 3 weeks? I lived with that for 2 or 3 weeks because I loved the speed.
And right, you were tolerating multiple hard locks a day.
Yeah. I just didn't want to switch back. I didn't want to switch back. But it was bad. I know I'm crazy. I know. It's ridiculous. But I really
like it. It's kind
of
a nice stress test, right? Like your ButterFS file system didn't get corrupted.
That's for sure. I was surprised. I lost very little work. I lost more work here at home, or I mean here at the studio, than I did at home with my machine locking up. I've lost more work just with random internet connectivity issues. We lost power this weekend at the studio, and I lost like half the dock I'd worked on. So that was thankfully not as bad of an experience as it could be, because you could see like there could be something where you're in the middle of something that's quite important. Maybe you're in the middle of installing updates or, you know, firmware flashing or something, and it does a hard log. Obviously, it's a bad thing. I didn't want to keep it that way, but I still wanted to have that real-time performance or as close to it as possible. So we started looking into our options. I think we considered maybe just a new kernel that we custom patched again.
Yep.
And that might actually be something we go back to for like Bcache FS and other things in the future. So we may actually end up back there again.
It is nice to have the stuff set up at least a little bit to be able to do that.
But you did a little look-skies at some of our packaged up options. And several distros like Arch and others have these packaged up as well, like they are in Nix. And of course, you have your stock upstream kernel, the latest, and you have the LTS options. But then there's some more fun options too.
Yeah, like Licorix. I don't know if that's how you say it.
I think it is.
Yeah, an enthusiast Linux kernel designed for uncompromised responsiveness and interactive systems, enabling low latency compute and AV production, reduced frame time deviation in games. I think it might be sort of built on further on top of the Zen kernel as well, which is a result of a collaborative effort of kernel hackers to provide the best Linux kernel possible for everyday systems.
Yeah, so that's an important distinction, though. It's built on top of Zen, so it follows Zen. It's a little bit behind. I don't think it was quite up to date when we tried it.
Yeah, and
it
didn't seem to maybe be in the Nix cache when I was trying to switch to it. So we were looking at Licorix. It might be something we would use in the studio because it is kind of a little more focused. I mean, like, yes, everyday responsive, but then a little bit more on, like, AV production as they talk about. So maybe a little closer to what we were aiming for with the full RT kernel.
But for desktops and, you know, maybe something you're gaming on, maybe you're doing some light production, and maybe you just want performance. It seems like the Zen kernel, which is where we ended up, Z-E-N, could be something to consider. It is current, I think, right? Yeah, we're on like 6.12 something. So
yep,
it's current.
6.12.
In fact, what version am I on? I wrote mine down. Right now I'm on the 6.12.2 Zen 1 release with preempt dynamic. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so there was other, so without going full preempt RT, we still had some other options for the kernel we were running to try to get it to be more preemptive. And a lot of kernels these days come in what's called preempt equals dynamic mode. And that lets you set it at boot time. So you can change the parameter on the kernel command line to tell it how much preemption you want to enable. And basically, it's sort of a toggle with different, you know, different levels. And as you go closer to full RT or full preempt, more and more kernel preemption spots. So little spots where the kernel goes, oh, I'm going to check here. Is there other stuff that wants to run? Let's switch. And chances for things to be more interactive. So you kind of negotiate that trade-off between interactivity and throughput. There's a really nice guide over at the Linux Audio System Configuration Guide.
Yeah.
Which we were reading anyway for audio stuff. And they kind of talk about two kernel command line options. So one is you set preempt equals full if you want to have more preemption, right? So it's preempt dynamic, which enables this. And then preempt equals full is basically all the stuff, the maximum preempt that's not gated behind the preempt RT config option itself. So it's not full RT, but it's all the stuff that like isn't hard real time.
So it's pretty close.
Yeah, it's the most...
As far as like we're going to experience, it's probably as close as we need to get.
Yeah, and then the other one is you can turn on thread IRQs, which I think makes interrupt handling happen on kernel threads, and it just seems to be... It's one of the options that gets force turned on when you turn on RT, so it's just another effort to sort of like...
Getting you a little bit closer.
Yeah, turn your dynamic kernel as close to the RT kernel as you can.
So we did this dynamic preempt RT, and we did the IRQ kernel mode stuff.
Yeah. And then worth noting too with Zen, so not only do you get like, you know, stuff like this, like making it more preemptive,
yeah,
but that also uses, which I don't know if you need these command line options necessarily with Zen or Licorix, they might apply them in the kernel config anyway, but they also use a custom scheduler, MUQSS, which is kind of like the BFS scheduler, but with changes. But this scheduler is also designed further for interactivity.
I guess my question is, and I'm going to ask Brent this in a moment, but my question that I'll put to the audience too is, do you have any interest in swapping out your kernels and trying to see if like there's benefits here? Like Brent, I have a sense, and I don't have any judgment with this statement, but I have a sense that this probably doesn't appeal to you.
It doesn't only because it introduces possible, well, in your case, lockups, but possible like other things to manage. And I don't have the confidence to feel like I can turn this on and off easily, or, you know, have enough knowledge to make this work well in my particular configuration. But tell me if I'm wrong. Like, maybe this is pretty easy to slide in.
Yeah, I mean, if it's packaged in your distro, then it's basically, you know, with Nix, it's especially easy, but in whatever distro, just install that kernel and it'll swap it out for the one that you have.
Yeah, you could think of like the Zen kernel, Z-E-N. You could think of that as like a remix of Upstream that is optimized for a desktop use. So maybe the main Linux kernel is sort of generally optimized for general work use cases. The Zen one, somebody who has, you know, gone through and curated certain settings and patches and has put that into Zen. So you could kind of think of it as you don't really have to know what it does because the person that put it together does, the packager. It's sort of the same thing with, you know, all your Linux packages.
Right, like the distros do this anyway, right? But they're taking the general Linux kernel and then kind of adding their own stuff on top and then trying to make it fit the use cases they perceive for the people they're distributing it to. So yeah, this is kind of swapping out that tuning for a more specific tuning. But yeah, like some of the folks working on Zen are also, you know, kernel contributors who,
right,
you know,
yes,
it's not just like a totally third party thing that has no overlap.
This is my thing is, I think a lot of Linux users have written this off as too dangerous to tinker, or not worth the hassle, or not worth the time. And I would flip that around and say you're wrong. I think it is worth the time and the hassle because this is a unique thing that we can do in Linux, and it's not necessarily been optimally tuned for your particular work case. And we see in so many other areas, we tweak so many other things about our desktop to make it optimized for our workflow and our area. And this is just another one of those. And I would challenge somebody out there to try it and see how it works because, yes, you know, you could go too far and really live on the very bleeding edge and have lockups like I had. But I always had the ability in my bootloader to just select a different version of the kernel if I had something really important to do and boot the kernel that didn't have real-time Linux.
Now, boost in with how many hard locks you'd be willing to tolerate per day.
Yeah. I mean, I really would challenge people to look at this with more of an open mind. I think we made back in the day when you had to go in the menu and choose all your options and then build your config and manually update your bootloader. Yeah, it really was quite the journey and definitely not worth all that effort. It just was awful. Just use the packaged kernel. That just made the most sense. But today, in this day and age, so many different ways to get this stuff.
And also, I mean, I don't know about you, but using Zen, I don't know, maybe there's like a slight difference, but it still feels way more snappy than stock.
Yeah, I guess we should have said that. But yeah, I'm still quite happy. I feel like it's a really good compromise. It feels about the same as the RT version, the full RT version did.
Yeah, very close. And at least for me, the temp stuff is all fixed. It's all back to, you know, running very nicely.
There's a whole world out there, I bet, of listeners that are tweaking their kernels for their particular work uses at work cases. And I feel like what you and I are doing on our custom machines right now are going to be tweaks that we apply, like the most stable, practical, actually make a difference tweaks we're going to end up applying to the studio systems when we maybe next year when we refresh.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
We're getting close. I feel like we're cooking with a lot of components now. There's a lot to this recipe, but I'm going to stick with the Zen kernel. So I'm on 6.12.2 right now, and I'm going to stick with it for a bit. And if I have any weirdness or anything like that, I'll report back like we did for this here. But I'm hoping to stick with it. We'll see. I mean, I could see something breaking at some point. I am, you know, now sort of on more of an edge case. But I challenge somebody out there. I challenge all of you out there. If your distro makes this possible, give it a shot. It's something that Linux actually makes possible for us to do. And I think it's gotten a bad rep. This was a pretty painless process. Even though I had a few crashes, I knew I always had an escape hatch. And most distros offer those now.
And now it is time for Le Boost.
We had a great boost week, and I gotta say there's a baller here who touches close to home. We got our very first baller, Aaron, which is dear to my heart.
Aaron came in with 100,000 sats. Hey, rich lobster! Aaron writes, Merry Xmas, y'all. If you could ask Santa for one thing, no matter the price, what would it be?
Wow.
I think it'd be a year of funding for JB.
Ooh. That's a nice.
Just right off, you know, okay, we start 2025. We know we have a year runway.
But that leads to the next question. What would you do with that runway?
Well, one thing is I would work a lot less. I would immediately, you know, like, and I think we'd take the last 3 weeks of the year off, you know, to really recharge and come back fresh. I think I'd try to do less. That's what I would try to do. What about you, Brent? What would, if you could ask Santa for one thing, would it be like a pneumatic tube to get you to the studio?
Well, I got to think big with this question. If I can ask Santa for one thing, no matter the price, see, that's the part that gets me, no matter the price. So I'm going to say, well, I'm going to say that Linux has the same funding as the two other massive corporations pushing distributions out there.
Yeah, okay, I like
all
that.
All right, not a bang bus, not a helicopter, but he's
going
to give
I'm
it to
going,
others.
I'm going, like, make the world a better place instead of, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all right, I just feel like you could have worked the bang bus in there. Like, you know, you get your bus and then you drive around and you spread goodwill to open source. You know, like, everybody wins.
Well, I was hoping that fit into your, you know, having the funding for JB.
Oh, yeah, right. That includes funding for the bus. Of course. Okay, well, I'll turn it selfish here then and say that I would like a GPU printer for Christmas.
Whoa. Oh, my God, that's brilliant. Yeah. Why aren't we
Which
working on that?
Which I guess means
that?
A fab.
Why aren't we working on that? You'd like a fab. I'd like to own NVIDIA for Christmas. Yeah.
No biggie, right?
Now that's thinking big, Wes. Good thinking.
Calm Brewer boosts in with 84,100 sats.
Hey, not bad.
Oh boy, they want to talk guarantee.
If anyone is in the U.S. and looking to get an FCC certification, KB6NU gives away his no-nonsense technician class license study guide for free on his site. He also sells paper, digital, and audio versions for all the classes. I use that audiobook for my general, and I'll probably use the extra version if I ever find some free compute time to learn it. Sorry, no Linux tie-in here, but keep an eye to this guy. The next ISS SSTV event.
Hey, that's great. So the website is kb6nu.com/study-guides.
And we'll have that linked in the show notes. Also, sorry, Calm Brewer, you generously tried to send a double boost here because I guess my node wasn't working. I did just switch to a new node. So do let me know if it's not working for you. It should be all up and operational now, and the rest of the boost seem to have gotten no problem.
But... got that new node backhaul.
You know, it takes a while.
Thank you for the boost, and thanks for the tip, Calm Brewer.
Now, we did get a special boost here from Black Host, 50,000 Satoshis, and that was, I guess, later yesterday?
Oh my God, this drawer is filled with Fruit Loops!
And what's so special about this boost is, Chris, it boosted the episode we are currently doing, which wasn't even out yet.
Now, that is generous. Thank you. Thanks, Black Host. Good to hear from you. Marchie's here with 42,000 sats. And guys, I don't know if you are aware of this, but this turns out to be the answer.
The answer to the ultimate question.
Thanks, Marchie. He says, no way am I going to migrate to Albi Hub self-hosted over the Christmas period. So I'll be using my sats before I lose my sats. Thanks for the PSA. Merry Boostmas. Well, thank you, Marchie. Although if you do want to, next weekend, we're going to help people get going with their Albi Hubs. Also, Fountain FM offers a hosted Lightning wallet. That could just be an easy way to go, too.
Can be a nice place to just send some sats if you're in between other nodes, too.
But thank you for thinking of us, too.
Nostromo boosts in with 26,037 sats.
How is that, Wes? How do you say that one?
Nostromo.
Well, let's hear it, good buddy.
Ah, oh, the last four digits of the boost amount are the zip code of a small town in a European country known for its beautiful Alps.
Oh.
Yes, zip code is a better deal.
I grew up nearby, but wouldn't want to live there today, as it feels a little too privileged.
You want to try doing that? He says, let's boost in other Linux town names from around the world. What? Oh. Linux town names? That gives us a hint.
That's a great idea.
Look on your
idea.
Map there. See if you can find a Linux town there, Wes. Yeah. We should really start marking these things down. Although with these coffee stains, I don't know. That looks like a cigar hole. I don't even know what happened there. You burned it.
There's a dog paw print, too.
Okay, right. So we're working with... 6037? That's the last four digits.
Entire sections of the map missing, dude. It's gonna get there. We're gonna get stumped sometime.
My normal way that I search the map is turning up things that can't. Why am I keep getting to Australia?
You know what you ought to do? Bring up old ChatGPT and tell it I have a riddle for you.
Oh, great idea.
And see, CS5.
I've got a riddle for thee.
Here, I'll take the next one while you do that, okay? Kangaroo Paradox comes in with 20,000 sats. I recently became a Jupiter Party member. Oh,
nice,
right on.
Thank you.
I love the raw bootleg and fully intend to binge listen to some earlier shows. Thanks for the tip on Obtanium. It's been a treat as a replacement to F-Droid. And goodbye, Aurora Store. I'm a Lineage OS user myself. No G apps, but Micro G as an OSS replacement for the apps that do require the Play services. I got the wife a refurb Pixel 7 Pro. Do you recommend Graphene for normies? What do you think, Brent?
Wow, that's a Graphene? Good question. I am in the, maybe it's not a good idea, but I'm in the process of throwing my parents onto Graphene with a Pixel 7. Each of them need new phones, and they're pretty privacy conscious, probably thanks to my scaring them. And I think it's ready. I think other than a few banking apps that have some issues with Graphene for a variety of reasons that we've talked about previously, everything else just seems to kind of work. I know there's a little bit of initial setup, you know, when you install an app, it asks you for certain permissions and things that aren't necessarily normal on, you know, vanilla Android or anywhere else that you're getting your Android, such as the Samsungs. But really, the trade-off, I don't think, is very big. We've been using Graphene for, what, 2 years now? And I think at this point,
it's all initial stuff.
Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable recommending it.
And considering the amount that normal people understand how their phone works and take advantage of various features anyway.
Right. I think if you just launch their core apps, make sure everything works, is signed in, I think it would probably be fine from there forward. That's my bet.
I guess I would say it's good to have someone who can be there to help you set it up. So Graphene for someone who's never, you know, put on their own OS on an Android phone, probably not. But if you've got someone there as an ambassador to set it up for you, go for it.
Oh, you brought a backup map.
Return of the map. Okay, Vindication. We're looking at Root Switzerland.
I see the theme now. I see the theme. Very good. All right. Thank you both, Nostromo, and of course, Mr. Paradox, Kangaroo, for those boosts. Appreciate it. And keep on rocking Lineage OS.
I'm getting rusty with the map, so thanks for... I need to work on my skills. We need more zip code boosts. Yakchip boosts in with 9,001 sats.
It's over 9,000!
For the Tuxies 2024 edition, category best power CLI tool, although I guess it's more of a TUI, I nominate JLess. For all the people who need to constantly look into JSON files, it's an invaluable helper tool. Plus, Chris, it's written in Rust.
Oh, you said it's written in what? Now, I'm looking at this, Wes, and I'm loving the structured output on the command line, the syntax highlighting. It basically takes a JSON file and just makes it super readable.
How would you say it compares to something like JQ?
I don't know if I could speak to that, but it seems maybe a little... I might be wrong. It seems... It's like... it's more like just less. It's just less, but it's less that knows JSON. You know what I mean? The less command?
Yeah.
It's less that knows JSON.
You nailed it.
JLess. At jless.io.
I folded the map up, so I'm getting there, because this is also a zip code boost.
Oh, where is it? Oh, there's a map.
From the beer-loving part of Europe, if you add 999 to the boosted amount.
Oh, boy.
So let me...
You got the calculator there?
I do, yep.
All right.
Well, it's an app.
I don't know if you need the calculator for this one.
Is there a method to the madness with these numbers when we add them? I mean, I'm sure it's also because it's expensive, but like, is there a hidden number? Well, I know that. I do love watching you scramble with that huge map. Oh, he got it out again. I love the confidence, though. He's got like a technique. A real flick of the wrist. All right, here we go, Wes. You got it?
I don't know that I do, but we are going to guess Zagreb, Croatia.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll go with that. Hello, what'd you say? Croatia? All right, we'll go with Croatia. That sounds right. Sounds good. Thanks for the boost.
Well, Chuck Kuka boosted in 10,000 Satoshis.
Live long and prosper.
Hey, that was a pleasant surprise getting my fountain feedback to them. Thank you for the value for value.
Thank you for the boost and the suggestions. We're still going through them. In fact, there's a brand new update coming out this week with a revamped and much improved boost UI with a faster boost and easier UI and easier to understand how much you're spending and all of that. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. Thanks for the boost. Nice to hear from you. Chaka. Sack Attack comes in with 5,432 sats.
This is a tasty burger.
I agree. 2024 has been the year of the immutable desktop Linux. Combine that with beefed up FlatHub for all your apps and hardware manufacturers that ship immutable distros by default. You now have something that is familiar to the vast majority of end users who want no-fuss operating systems and app ecosystems, kind of like their phone. Valve and Fedora, I think, have the right idea. I'm excited to see what GNOME and KDE come up with. Also, the kernel development coverage was appreciated. Well, thank you. That's good to know. I am stacking that feedback, as you know. I'm taking a wait-and-see approach with the GNOME OS and the KDE Banana.
Plenty of time on that.
But excited. There is so much they can build on top of. There's so much, especially with all the lessons they've learned over the years. We'll see. But I do think the trend has been pretty clear. It is very, very strong. Things are leaning in the immutable direction, and probably pretty soon will be the default for a lot of end users. Maybe not all Power Linux users, but a lot of end users.
Soham G boosts in with 4,222 sats, which is partially a duck.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it exactly is, but it's kind of duck-like.
Well, there's one of the, it's two boosts, you see? Mm-hmm. Hybrid boost. Mm-hmm. Well, continuing on immutability, and specifically responding to immutability doesn't let me muck around in my root. I think the idea is that you should be able to muck around in your root. It's just that changes should be logically consistent and rollbackable. Immutability deniers will soon find themselves in the same predicament as systemd deniers. It's the year of immutability for sure. Also, transferring sats bought on Cash App to Fountain was super painless and easy. Just a simple invoice copy paste.
That's great to hear. You know, the standard there that I think is really becoming universal on Lightning is LNURL. And it just makes Lightning addresses look like email addresses. And the apps are starting to universally support that. And I think you're going to see more and more of the podcast apps go that way as well.
Oh, yeah. They went on to say, so I buy sats on Cash App to boost from Fountain when I listen on Podverse. Podverse has that no-nonsense GPL software charm, which, yeah. But it's a bit lacking on the sat wallet front. Fountain is a little too busy for me personally. I do hope Podverse keeps getting better. React.js creeps me out, or I would be in the weeds sending PRs myself.
There's a lot of work on Podverse, so you may go just check in, because some of it's a new code base. There's tons of innovation happening over there. And the next several releases of Fountain are really polishing up the library UI, the first page UI. I don't know if I can say that, but I just did. The playback stuff, and the one that just came out is the boost stuff. So lots of nice improvements coming throughout the Fountain UI over the next few releases as we round out the year. Great boost. Thank you. It's so nice to hear from you, too. And I completely agree with your thoughts on immutability as well.
We have a boost here from Fountain from Mount B Dude, otherwise I guess known as MTB Dude.
It's a boost.
I would definitely like to have transcripts when I'm looking for something said in a past episode. I normally asked ChatGPT when something was said, but it would be easier to just search your transcripts.
I would be curious how well old GPT does on that. But yeah, it would be a lot easier if we just had a tool to let you do that.
Okay, yeah. I've wondered, I haven't heard a lot of demand from the audience. I have to be honest with you. It's something that is on our short list. And for the members bootleg feed, we've been experimenting with an automated transcription system over there. So if you are listening to the member bootleg feed, there is a transcription file. However, it hasn't been a perfect implementation, so we haven't rolled it out wider. But it was an opportunity for us to test. So thank you for the feedback there. That's something I think we'll take very seriously. Brandon L. came in with 2,048 sats. Chris, since you're not using the Audible app anyways, check out Libro.fm. It's got a referral link here. All your audiobooks are downloadable, DRM-free, and you select a local bookstore to support with your purchase.
Oh, interesting.
Another pro is that you can buy credit bundles at the discount rate without having an active subscription. That is nice. Availability has been nearly as good as Audible for me, and I'm happy I made the switch back in August.
Well, I'm definitely going to try this.
Yeah,
thank you.
Same.
Libro.fm.
I can see maybe it's trickier if you already have a giant Audible back library that you want to be using. Well,
you pull them down with Libation or Audible, and then...
Well then, no reason not for you not to try it either, huh?
It may be. Thank you for that boost. That's a great tip. Appreciate it, Brandon.
Lima 3 boosts in with 5,000 sats.
You're supposed!
Boosting to clear up our confusion around Veeam.
Okay.
Veeam is a robust backup solution, but the last time I checked, it still required a Windows server to host it. Talking to a rep at VMware Explorer, they are working on a browser-based GUI so they can move to a Linux host. Here's hoping it happens soon. So yeah, sounds like a very enterprise-y backup solution. Also, user 4794 came in with a row of ducks real quick just to say, boost!
Boost!
Well, Squared Triangle boosted in 13,337. I think that's a megalead sats. I've been mostly listening to podcasts while commuting using Wired Android Auto and Fountain.fm. While in the background, it's just working fine. However, as soon as it's displayed full screen or in split screen, its window keeps disappearing and reappearing. The podcasts continue playing without issue, but the only way to continue using Android Auto is to put Fountain.fm in the background. I can capture a video and send it if that would help the team.
What would be helpful would be to know what type of Android device. When I hear this kind of stuff, when I kind of chase it down, what I often discover is that it's memory management. And maybe for some reason, like, it's low signal, so Fountain's working extra hard because maybe you're streaming sats or getting sats streamed to you. And so there's a lot more memory usage or something, and so the app closes. Where if it's foreground, I would think, I don't know. But that's often the, so which Android device and how much memory is on the system, and then any, if you have any tools out there people recommend to, like, check your free memory. Because even if you have, like, an Android device with 128 gigs of RAM, if something's using 128 gigs of RAM, it doesn't really matter. We need to know how much free RAM is on the device as well. I know it isn't helpful, but as a Pixel 7 user, this is my daily drive. And I just drove for 4 hours on Friday with the setup and didn't have any issues like that. But I think it's maybe because maybe I have a newer phone. So it would be really helpful to know, Squared, but I'll keep an eye on it. Thank you. And if you want to keep us in the loop, I'd really appreciate it. Soul Reaper's here with 6,666 sats.
That's not possible. Nothing can do that.
I think Soul Reaper can.
Watch your souls, boys.
First time booster. Heyo. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to set that up. I know it can be obnoxious sometimes. I agree with Mike from the last episode about the Iron Maiden boost theme. Okay. All right. Also, I was at the Sacramento meetup back in September, so the first time meeting other Linux users in person, I was the noob who uses Zorin OS. Now I dove in the deep end and I installed Catchy OS, which is a lot of fun. All right, I got to go take a look at Catchy OS. Take a look at it. Also, awesome to hear about the SAC meetup. So Catchy OS, CACHYOS, a blazing fast and customizable Linux distribution designed to deliver lightning fast speeds and stability, ensuring smooth and enjoyable computing experiences every time you use it. I like that.
Do you think they use a custom kernel?
I believe it's based on Arch.
Yeah, it looks like it. Looks like it's based on Arch.
Yeah, it's
Arch.
One I think we should maybe try at some point.
Oh, look at this, boys. Look what they basically are using the Zen kernel here. They've got RT enabled.
I called it.
They've got some scheduling tweaks turned on. This is fancy out of the box. It looks nice too. It looks like it might be Plasma based too. All right. That could be a fun one to play around with. Thanks, Reaper. Nice to hear from you. Thanks for setting up the boost and thanks for mentioning the distro.
Odyssey Westra boosts in with 4,491 sats.
Incoming transmission.
With FlatHub, I would love to see some sort of funding tag like you can do with Podcasting 2.0. We don't really need an account, and we could just use something like a transaction ID to keep track of purchases. On my end, with my paint, I'm looking into using Lightning to send split payments to contributors on a release.
Ah.
Value for value philosophy basically lines up with us in the open source realm, so let's take advantage of that.
Great idea.
Heck yeah. That's brilliant, Odyssey. And I completely agree. I really think there is a very nice one-to-one lineup there. And I would be so impressed if FlatHub could roll out an app store that we all could use and keep track of our purchases and not require an account. I just think it would require them embracing technologies that they're not ready, that the whole Linux community is not ready to embrace. But God, wouldn't that be great if these things could start launching and we didn't have to create accounts or connect one of our many large enterprise tech giant accounts to these things? It would just be so great. You're onto something there.
Mr. Westra also snuck in a little birthday boost live today.
Ah!
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. That's great.
Well, Dexbot boosted in what looks like a binary boost here. 10101 Satoshis.
The traders love the vol.
Not sure why, but my boost didn't go through last time.
Wes.
Sorry.
I stack my flax with Bandcamp if I can. For more mainstream flax stacking and streaming, I use Kobuz Studio Sublime. The discount on high-res album purchases pays for the streaming, so I might as well. That said, Tidal DL has me thinking about a Switch.
Thanks, Dexbot. I had not even heard of that service. Studio Sublime with high-res albums, huh?
Okay.
They just have Sublime albums on there and that's it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, right? I'm like 2 weeks into my Tidal subscription. I've been pretty happy with it, and I have not yet played around with Tidal DL, but as I enter my last week of like a free month, I think that's when I'm going to experiment with that.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of having my own player, like some of the ones that use Jellyfin, because the Tidal app is all right, but it'd be nice just to have the songs I love. Great boost. Thank you, Dex. Fuzzy Mistborn here is here with 5,000 sats. That is a Jar Jar boost.
You're supposed.
So I moved from Albi to Fountain. While I don't plan to use it for my podcast app, it does make for an easy Lightning wallet. I have no interest in dealing with a self-hosted Albi setup. I did try Breeze, but the character limit on the boost was very infuriating. Yeah, it's like 120, 128 characters on Breeze. I should really talk to them about it and see if they could increase it. The problem here, and this is actually being worked on right now. I know, Mistborn, that doesn't make you feel better, but they're coming up with a way to separate the message from the payment information. The trick has always been the message kind of got crammed into the payment information, and then that was never a standard. So different apps implement different character limitations, and there's not just like a universal limitation. When we separate the message metadata from the payment, then there will be a universal standard for the message, and there'll be longer lengths in apps like Breeze, I would imagine.
Yeah, right. The whole payment has limitations in like the custom TLV record, but then depending on what metadata you stick in the actual boost part, well, then that means there's different restrictions on how much can actually go in the right one part of the metadata that is the message.
Right. Yeah, because there's other things in there that you don't add, like the app and the time and the splits information. So there's other things it has to make room for.
And different apps put in different things.
Yeah. So that is being sorted out right now in the Podcasting 2.0 community. And there'll be improvements rolling out probably early 2025.
3KVH boosts in with 10,000 sats.
This is the way.
Recently, I was eating at a Japanese fusion restaurant, and I found myself thinking, boy, they really are doing a lot with mayo these
days. Aren't they, though?
They are doing a lot with mayo these days.
Yeah, just ask Brent.
I was referring to this just last night because we were having tacos, and of course, as I do, I put mayonnaise on my taco, and my brother was like, yeah, that clip is pretty accurate for you.
Thanks, Free. That's a great boost.
Whomever, this is a great name, sent in a row of ducks. I started with a self-hosted in January, but I've been listening to all the JB shows since the summer. Never could make the boosts work, but I finally buckled down and got the Albi Hub up and going.
Hey!
Nicely done.
Right to the self-hosted.
And welcome. We're really glad to have you as a listener.
Thank you for getting that set up.
There are so many things I've wanted to say, but there's something I need to start with. In episode 573, timestamp 1420, that's very specific, of the live feed, you played the Going Lit music. I absolutely need it in my life. I keep pulling up the episode and skipping ahead to hear it again. Every time I try to use Shazam, it comes up with a different and incorrect track. What is that track you played?
I wonder if it was this song. So if you search for Star Trek TNG, Airwolf mashup.
I guess it's maybe we'll have to go check this timestamp.
If this is the song, there you go. Star Trek TNG, Airwolf mashup.
Isn't it already in your search history?
Yeah, we should check it. We'll check it and see if we can call it out. If you, Brent, it's your job to remind us after the show.
Oh, right? Yeah.
There you go.
I'll get the map.
Anonymous comes in with 5,123 sats.
Make it so.
Big week and a bigger couple of months. Our first child was born in October. It's a little girl. Well, congratulations. That's congrats. So awesome.
Wonderful.
To hear. And then this week, I set up Albie Hub.
Also, congrats.
Well, that kind of pales in comparison there, but nicely done.
Very awesome to hear about both. Congratulations. Also, Synapse and Hoarder. Hoarder is an app I talked about recently on Self-Hosted. I'm enjoying catching up on all of the JB shows after a couple of months off. Cheers to the team. P.S. Let me know if boosts like this are working. Yes, you got it. You got it. You got your Albie Hub up and going. Well done. And my node received it.
The only thing is, your name is anonymous. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but if not, you can set a different name.
Yeah, you just go in Pomverster and set that. Congratulations on your firstborn. That is an exciting time, and I know how those first few months are all just a blur. We're just happy to have you back on board and hear from you.
Navoyu boosts in with 11,159 sats.
I think that's a taco boost.
Just boosting in to empty out my LB wallet, and also just to let Brent know, I maintain a fleet of 37 machines running Gen 2
mm-hmm.
Linux.
Brent. Oh. Mm-hmm. Brent.
Sounds very modern.
I've been a handbook contributor, and I am also still waiting on you to install it.
There it is.
Also, 30 of those machines do in fact use Pixie to boot.
Wow. Ooh. Brent, that's how you do it, man. You know, you get NetBoot working on your network, and then just some days when you're feeling a little wild, you just boot into a Gen 2 environment.
Because it takes multiple days to get it going fully, is that what you're saying?
Brent. Oh, gosh. Come on.
I will do this at some point. I just don't know when, but we'll see.
Thanks thanks for thinking of us, Nev. We love hearing from you. So in the future, if you want to boost in and you need help getting set up, just reach out. Because, you know, you're one of our OG favorites out there. Speaking of OG favorites, True Grits comes in with 17,000 and 10 sats.
Need a zesty drink.
That is a zesty drink. Thanks, True Grits. All right. I pulled the trigger. I'm sending my first message from Graphene OS. Nice. Oh, I got the Pixel 9 Pro XL direct from the Google store because it had a great Black Friday sale. I'm very happy so far. And I've only had problems with one app. I bet Wes can relate. It's the same app.
That old Cash app, I bet.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. That freaks me out so bad because the one thing I got my family to migrate to off of was Apple Pay to Cash App. Yeah. And if I weren't able to get to Cash App.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Oh, but that's awesome. And it's nice to hear a report from the Pixel 9 Pro XL.
Yeah, that could be. Who knows?
You know, I always think, like, I always like keeping my eye on it just in case something were to happen.
Yep.
I mean, the thing is, the phone's just fine. I'd love a little more battery life, but the phone's just fine. That's all of our boosts above 2,000 sats.
Oh, I just want to raise one up.
Go ahead.
Real quick.
Pull it up, Wes.
You know, our pal Hybrid Sarcasm sending in a 50-sat test boost from their new LB Hub wallet.
Fun will now commence.
That's fun.
So just confirm an ACK, we got it.
Well done, Hybrid. Well done. And if you have any troubles, join us. Well, you always join us, and we'll help you with it next weekend. All right. Thank you, everybody who boosted. We do 2,000 sats and above for our on-airs just for time. And also, I want to give a special shout out to all of our sat out. That's awesome. I want to give a special shout out to all of our sat streamers. 35 of you helped support this episode, and you stacked 61,956 sats for episode 593. When you combine that, we had a pretty good showing of 60 different individuals participating in supporting episode 593. Together, they collectively stacked 517,855 sats. We really appreciate it. Episode 593 is one of our last live episodes of the year, and this was a great showing to send us off. Of course, our last live show will be next weekend. And we appreciate everybody who supports us, either using the Fountain app or decides to go the self-hosted route and set up Albie Hub and pair it with the app of their choice. App choices are at podcastapps.com. And of course, thank you to our members out there who support us with autopilot support at linuxunplug.com/membership. We got some special thank you features just for you. Really, it's just a nice week of support. Appreciate everybody very much. The show continues because of you. You know, we're kind of running on one wheel. With the sponsors on the network, we're literally like down by 60-70%, but the show continues to go because of that support. So we really, truly do mean it. Thank you, everybody. Wes, you found such a neat little tool. It's not something you couldn't have done without this, but it just is one of those things that makes life a little easier.
Yeah, okay, so just, this is brand new. I saw it over on the rLinux subreddit from the author posting it. It's called Ports Info, and really it's just like a single file little Python app, but it surfaces the kind of info you get from Netstat or SS in a really nice little GTK style GUI. It's very GTK, so, yeah. You know, there is that.
But a very nice GTK app.
And it just puts stuff that you kind of want to see, right? So when you first look at it, it's a breakdown of all your ports, including TCP, IPv6 versions of that, and UDP as well. But if I go click in here, right? So here's TCP 22. I've got OpenSSH running, and I can see, not only I can see the exact command that's running.
Yeah.
I can see, you know, all the, what's the local address, the foreign address, what the state of the socket is, the user, the CPU usage, the memory usage, when it was started.
Yeah. And its active status, if it's listening or just sleeping, if something's actually actively talking to it. And it just makes it really simple to have an understanding of what's publicly listening on your computer and get right to like what process is actually listening. Like I said, there's ways you can do this already, but Ports Info is a nice, simple utility to make it possible.
It's also capable of prompting you for the SSH password, which it needs if it's going to get all of that info, like what process is using the port and stuff.
Oh, neat. So you mean for like remote machines?
No, but just like locally.
Oh, okay. Well.
So you don't have to like run it as root. It can just prompt you for it.
Yeah, okay. Ports Info. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. Those show notes, I mention them often, but they're very useful. LinuxUnplugged.com/593 for this one. Now, don't forget, we really want to get your votes in the Tuxies. This may be the last Tuxies ever, so go get your opinion heard so we have the most representative sample possible. It is Tuxies.party. And, you know, you're doing your Linux civic duty over there. And last but not least, I'm looking for your thoughts around switching out your Linux kernel. Are you too afraid to experiment? Tell me about it. Boost in and let us know your thoughts around that, and also the best terminal for a GTK desktop. Because I'll tell you, man, I could really use that advice. You can do that with Fountain FM or another app. We'll have links in the show notes, of course, like we do.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
At least for one more time. Check it out. JupiterBroadcasting.com/calendar to get it in your local time. We'll have it pending in the podcasting 2.0 feeds. The Mumble Room will be rocking and rolling. Just need to get the Mumble app, probably packaged for your distro already. And it's also available as a flat pack, probably an app image, probably a snap. It's one of the OGs that's been there forever. I don't think you'll have a hard time finding it. You could probably ask ChatGPT, right? I guess so. Okay, well, one last time. Thank you so much for listening. Links at linuxunplugged.com/593. I'm not going to mention it again. I promise you that. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you right back here next Sunday.
Tuxies! Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo!